Någonstans i Nordmark.
Hello everybody and welcome back to our podcast.
Hey, yes. Mama. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to make right something that we apparently have done wrong in the past two episodes of this.
Have we ever done anything wrong?
Yeah, because we apparently
imagine us doing something wrong.
No, and me neither. But apparently, someone thinks we've done something wrong because there have been complaints about us not having enough wine and cheese.
Oh right, yes, so, that's true. Mm.
So now I am holding a glass of wine and a piece of cheese.
You know what? I'm holding a glass of wine as well.
Oh, and we also do have a guest, but I'm not 100% sure if our guest has had the memo about the wine.
But I have chocolate.
Oh, that's good. Chocolate is good.
Chocolate is good.
Wine, so, cheese, and chocolate.
Cheese and chocolate, cheese and wine, wine and chocolate, all. Yeah. So since, we have a guest, maybe you would want to introduce yourself. Hello, who are you and where are you from?
Hi, I guess that's reasonable. I am Libby Cripps Mundanely, all over Facebook or the internet. And in the SCA, I'm Atlas of Gitter's daughter. I'm in Drachenwald now in Knight's Crossing down in Germany. But my SCA world tour began in California and West Kingdom. And it kind of traveled all throughout from West down to Kai'i, over to a little bit of Glenalbin and Meridies into Atlantia, and then hopped over the water all the way to here.
Wow.
So
that's cool. I think that maybe you are the guest that we have had in this podcast that have then lived in most kingdoms.
Most kingdom. It must be that, yes. I can't imagine anyone else, really. Yeah. I think you win.
Yeah. Yay! More chocolate, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's your prize is your own chocolate for that.
Sweet.
Congratulations. That's awesome. So how come? When did you start playing in ESA?
So about almost exactly 9 years ago, we started playing because one of John's coworkers really wanted to hit him with a stick.
Oh.
And John's impression at the time was this was much more like the like game LARP foam padded, you know. I was like, nah. The guy did not do a very good job of explaining this at all. And he's like, nah, not really getting into it. But the guy, you know, our friend of ours was like, no, come do this. And he linked me the website at some point, and I was looking through it, and there was a listing for Collegium. And here was an entire day, which is university in West Kingdom, of arts and science classes for free.
Ooh.
I'm an American college student studying art. Free is a magic word to me.
I was just going
to
say, nothing's for free.
Mm-hmm. Wait. I could take this specialty calligraphy class for free? Ooh. What? Not $6,000?
Mm-hmm. What? It's strange we haven't had more members because of that. I mean, it's free.
Yeah.
Oh, it was huge and it was amazing. And I went and it ended up being a little terrifying because John at that time worked a job that had this really weird, they called it a Panama schedule, where it was like 3 days on, two off, two on, four off, something. Oh. Like it rotated every 3 weeks would be the same, but that 3 week rotation was really weird. And it ended up that he couldn't go. And believe it or not, actually really shy with new people and new places. And this was my first time going to something. And I'm taking my 4-month-old kid and we're going to go. I know nothing. And I had a blast. Absolutely fell in love and came home that day and told John, you got to figure out something to do because we're doing this.
Great.
Well, and I mean, he kind of sort of did. He found stuff to do as well, right?
Yeah, we went to the next event was a turkey tourney, actually, where you literally fight for a frozen turkey because it's early in the fall. And so in the States, you get all the turkey holidays. So
I was just going to say, I'm guessing it was close to Thanksgiving. And
So big turkey, it's a nice prize, right?
We can have a tourney like that in Sweden, in Nordmark. We just have frozen ham.
Yeah, in November.
I mean,
a tree.
That's what we have for Christmas.
Saffron. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would go buy saffron bonds. Yeah. We can. I mean, you do have a war over the crackers. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the pancakes, and yeah,
put something on the crackers.
Well, I mean, that's still one of my best successes in life ever. But so we went and we showed up at site, and we're kind of, you know, walking around the site and looking, and he hears that first sound of the sword hitting the shield, and I, you know, the whiplash you get from like a car wreck. That was basically my husband's head.
Right.
And
love at first sight, really.
Love at first sound.
That's what he hadn't even seen it yet. He just heard it.
Mm-hmm. He heard that sound and went, "What's that? That's not rattan, or that's not, you know, foam floppy noodle things." Yeah.
That is something different.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's cool. So that was 9 years ago then.
Yeah. Hmm. That was right after Elric was born. And then we played there, and we kind of, while we were in West, we went up to Antir and then down to Kaid a bit. And then we actually moved over to Georgia. And then while we were in Georgia, we went down all the way through like Glen Aubyn and Meridies and kind of landed really playing in Atlanteas, where a lot of our household family and stuff is still there. And then the army shipped us overseas in the middle of a great pandemic. It was amazing.
Right. That must have been really tricky at like a very strange time to arrive in a new country, in a new part of the world.
It was weird in personal ways, professional ways, SCA ways, family ways, trying to, you know, make choices for your child in the middle of all that. Like, I was the first of the COVID laurels, actually, because of that. Right. So because we were moving, and like, I had my writ before, but then we were PCSing here. And so that happened. And then we moved here. And so actually, humorously enough, my first event as a peer was actually not in the kingdom that elevated me. It was here.
Right. So for how long have you been in Knight's Crossing now, in Drachenwald? So that was it. So it was during COVID. Was it like 3-4 years ago?
I think we're right almost at 4 years now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's gonna be pretty I think because August will be August will be 4 years. So three and a half ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
And do you have any is there a stop or an ending for that, or can you stay how many years you like?
Interestingly, time choice. So currently we are for sure here until 2026. At that point, we actually just found out about a week ago he is done with the army at that point. So we're currently literally in the middle of making that decision. Like, what do we want to do? Humorously enough, the top of most of our list is Sweden, but it's whether or not that actually can make that work.
It's a very nice place. I can recommend it a lot.
Like, it would be most welcome.
Yes.
I absolutely, it's literally the practical aspects of like the mundane life, you know, okay, that means we have to find a job and see how expat life actually works. It is different. It's it's not the same.
No, it's not the same. No. We've got great universities, and they're for free. So, thinking about Eric, like,
I went back to college. I'm like that. I'm actually finishing up my last degree in the States right now, specifically so I can transfer the whole degree over rather than try to transfer classes. It's the hope. So we kind of fell in love big time, and
yay! That sounds excellent. So just fingers crossed for that. That would be fantastic. So. Great. So, okay, so now we have a bit of the background story. And we've talked previously in other episodes about like the different areas of Drachenwald. And now we're talking about then Knight's Crossing, which is Germany. Is there anything, like, since you've now seen and played in several kingdoms, is there anything that like strikes you now that we've sort of almost kind of gone back to normal when it's not pandemic anymore and we actually go to events and stuff? Is there a huge difference between like the, and now I'm gonna just like put all the US kingdoms into one. I'm sure they're vastly different as well, but I do know that there is a larger difference between there and here. So like, are there things that struck you as very different when you arrived here and started actually playing live when things started happening again, that just feels that were like, oh, this is not how I usually do SEA, but it's cool. Or it's like, oh, this is weird.
Like, humorously enough, they both stem from the same thing. Here, because so many people fly or train or travel, in the fact that indoor sleeping and feast is just a given is hugely different. But that also tailors into a lot of things, like the running joke in the US is you can tell how long you've played in the SCA by your car. You start with your car, and then you get your truck, and then you get your minivan, and then you hit the point where you're like, screw this, and you get the trailer, and everything just lives in the trailer, and you haul the trailer to the site. And it's because quite literally on a weekend, I took the kitchen sink. Like, you take the tent. So the double war setup that here is, you know, the one big setup for 2 weeks was weekend standard. That was the only way to play because we were out in the hayfield. There was no.
That's a big difference.
There was no kitchen. There was no site. There was nothing like that. So anything you wanted to do, you took.
Yeah.
So here, that does change a lot of things because everything has gone smaller. Everything has gone less. I don't take 7 outfits for a weekend anymore. This is still weird. I keep thinking I need to make more garb. No, I really don't. It's fine. And then the other kind of big one that maybe this is probably the hardest or the one I miss the most, and it's kind of layered, because we just use hay fields, what usually happens is there's a big central area built up, a big square, and everybody sets day shades around it. In West Kingdom, the day shades are actually owned by the groups, and they're massive, like bigger than three or four houses sometimes, I think, where they're huge dragon wing day shades, because literally you put people out in the sun in 110 Fahrenheit. I can't do that math in my head right now. You put people out in the middle of the sun, they're going to die.
Yeah.
So you put
it's
a very practical matter of you have to provide shade and water, things like that. So, and then even in Atlantia, you have smaller groups, households, baronies, but they would bring the day shades and set them up around this big field. And most of the activities would take place either on the field or in those day shades right around the field. So it was really easy to be a part of everything. To sit there and watch the fighting while you were having a sewing circle, to meander over and check out the ANS display that's just under a tent, and cheer on the rapiers, or to kind of be involved in all of it and support all of it. And the reality of having sites where the list field is often a separate complete area, and we're in an enclosed building over here, and there's a class over in a different building over there. That's something I've struggled with, is where do I go? Where do I be? Who can I sit with? I don't know if this is maybe an American culture. You in high school, you walk in the cafeteria and you're like, who do you sit with? And it's this complete panic moment.
it's common in schools everywhere, I think.
Okay.
It's pretty much the same. And it's something that
you can't talk about that in high school, you know. Now.
No, but that's actually interestingly something that we have also addressed when it comes to events in Sweden. Particularly larger ones where there are larger sites with, as you describe, where you have this activity over there and then this one over there, and then someone has a sewing circle thingy in their camp, but it's open to everyone. But if you don't know the people in that camp and you just hear about the sewing circle, you go, can I come? And who am I going to see?
Am I
welcome?
I know
anyone?
Like, that's literally my current little thing right now, is you were tasking what I was passionate about. I'm like, it's not either. Yay, ADHD. I'm sorry. I have a new squirrel. But I'm putting together a tiny little tabletop welcome ANS sign. And in it, I want it to be literally fit in a baggie that you could just, you know, stick in a carry-on or whatever. And have in it a couple of like scribal kits, little embroidery kits, something that you can just hand somebody. No experience, no mess, no nothing. Just sit and play.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like my little pet project, I guess, at the moment, is putting those together and hoping that we can kind of like, and I found little signs that'll stand on the table and they just kind of tell us, go up and sit there. Yeah. And just kind of like, literally, here's the welcome banner.
I think so.
A really good idea, because I mean, I've been in the SA for ages, but I can feel like, oh, they're looking over there. It looks like they're having fun, but they don't need me. Okay, I go on. But I know that if I go there, I sit down, I'll be welcome. But you know, the little bosses inside your head just
exactly. Yep. Like, and I've never ever gotten an unwelcome no, you know, don't sit here, don't do that, but it's still hard. It's still hard to know, you know. And for me, one of the amazing things about Europe as a whole and Dragon Ball is there's so much, just everybody makes stuff. And it's just most for, it's, I don't know, perception perhaps, most of the Dragon Ballers I know, this is just a normal part of life. Like, make your mundane clothes or make your, you know, make a new piece of furniture for your house is just as common as make your SCA clothes. But at least in the States, it's not. We don't have a maker culture, to the point where it's kind of a faddish thing at the moment. It's, there's starting to be this little like homemade movement is a thing, but it's a very niche kind of weird thing. And if you tell someone you made your clothes, what they're expecting is something like a frumpy, out of date, those things that you made in high school when you didn't quite know what you were doing, that's the expectation. And that was part of what I fell in love with the SCA, though, is that all of a sudden I could come and sit down around people and like, what do you mean you're weaving?
Yeah. And yeah, it's true, because like almost everyone is doing something.
Yeah.
Sort of also bleeding over into mundane life. It's like, yeah.
And now I like, which, who all weaves? Or who sews? I don't know. Yep. I want to know because I want to pick your brain because I'm nerdy like that. But
yeah. So maybe we should do a, at some point at a larger event, we should do an ANS circle, and we can like group people. But that would also be really difficult because people would move around. It's like, well, I'm weaving, but I'm also doing this. I'm also doing calligraphy, and I'm doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, you're saying that, Adam, at the most recent coronation where he did the Pier Garden, and he just had like little, they were like flower shaped post-it notes for people to write. You could just literally have, okay, so the pink post-it notes is fiber arts, and the blue post-it notes is metalworking, and the brown, and everybody grab a garden and end up with your garden of like, look around you literally and go, hey, who all has pink? It doesn't matter what else they have, but they also have pink.
Like,
or also pink? Have whatever. Yeah. Like, it would be really cool to know who just wants to nerd over this thing.
That
would be cool.
That is true. A lot of fun. Yeah. Yeah, because sometimes it can also be difficult when you're, well, especially if you're a newcomer. I mean, either a newcomer to the SCA or a newcomer to a certain area or new people, to just know like who's doing what and who should I talk to about these things, like, and who knows what's going on. Whom should
I talk to someone about it?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I still, like, I mean, I have been in Dragon Ball for 3.5 years and actively playing the whole time, and still, it'll like, wait, you do what?
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah. So it's it's definitely something that is good, and I do like that initiative of yours with the signs being like, here we are doing arts and science, and you are most welcome to join us. Like, please,
I mean, if you want one, they came in a pack of 7, so because it was one of those things where it was cheaper to buy the pack of 7 than it was to buy one.
Well, of course.
So I'm gonna be like, who wants one? Please somebody take these and use these. So
yeah. No, but I think that's something to like. I mean, for everyone who has one, just bring them to all the events and be like, sign, here we go. Now we're going to sit here and do things. Let's put the sign up.
Like, it doesn't have to be formal. It doesn't have to be scheduled. It doesn't have to put any kind of infrastructure on it at all. Just
be, need to be there.
Literally just saying, I'm welcome. Or, you know, welcome. That's it.
Yeah. We just want all the people here.
Exactly.
Come and hang out.
Come to us.
Let me nerd you.
One of us.
The first taste is free.
Always. Yeah, it's what we do. We just lure people in.
Yeah.
It's the best way to do it.
It's not a cult. Not really.
No, not at all.
Nope.
No. Just a little bit, maybe.
Perhaps sometimes.
But then talking about, like, I mean, this is your new like pet project, your squirrel thing, this new one. Mm-hmm. But I also do know that, as I mentioned in the beginning, like, that you have lots of other interests as well, and things that you do, and we're talking about arts and science.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that you are very involved in the whole sort of scribal business of the kingdom nowadays. You've sort of stepped up and taking lots of responsibility on that. What is it that you do?
That was an accident, actually.
An accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, I am not
the helium hand again?
I did not even do Scribal before Dragon Ball, but
Now well, you do.
You know.
Yes, I am an art major, so I have to caveat that by saying my degree is in studio art, which is part of the reason I did not want to do Scribble initially, because that felt, I don't know, I mean, that's silly. That felt like cheating. It could be, I'm just silly. I will own that. Yeah, but here, at first, I was absolutely terrified of Dragon Balls. Just make it. It's fine. Everyone's going to love it. When I came from a kingdom where I was just starting to look at Scribble, and there's a book, and it's like 47 pages long of, you know, they need to have this, and they need to have this. And Atlantis, wow, compared to other kingdoms, is still very low, but it needs to have a space for these signatures and the herald's verification. And here's examples. And some of it isn't like what it must have, but here's sample texts. Here's examples of different heraldic layouts. Here is, so there was a lot of that, which good, you know, good, bad. It's a mix of requirements, but also examples to come and like, here's a blank page, have fun.
Oh yeah.
It's a little bit terrifying. But I have seen the caliber of scribes that come out in Dragon Ball, and the, when you give somebody that much freedom and they can really chase down what inspires them, it's amazing to see what people come up with, and the variety, and the, whether it's, you know, dyeing pergamentata or dyeing parchment to certain colors and then gilding the whole thing, or doing black work, or doing incredibly detailed portraits or crazy pen and ink things, and or full-scale runestones, because that was crazy.
Yeah.
That happens from time to time, yes.
It does happen, yeah. Yeah,
like, it's there amazing. Some
old ones around old sites that we used to use way back in the day, they're sort of still staying around.
That's amazing.
So, like, yeah, the runestones thing.
You need to tell the Bureau of Antiquities that there actually is a new runestone somewhere when you put them up.
Yeah, it's a good thing to contact them, the Swedish National Heritage Board. To let them know that, so we put a runestone here and it's not real, just so you know.
Right.
And they go like, oh, okay.
That way they do know, I guess. So they're not later some poor archaeologist is going, but how did they do that?
Hopefully they it's sort of registered somewhere. But yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome. But yeah, like the as for me, as a person who does not do calligraphy, illumination, I don't do Scribble work at all. It's just, I'm just amazed. Like every time, every scroll I see, I'm like, oh.
Because I do the calligraphy.
Yes,
and
you do.
I think that the calligraphy has become, I mean, people are really, really good. Really good. In the professional way.
I mean, calligraphy is magic. Wow. I'm bad at that. Give me a light board and an ink pen so I can trace that, please. But give it up. And then it kind of, there were several people who wanted to try, and I quite literally got looked at and told, "You're a lawyer. You'll teach us."
Okay.
That was my first time going, wait, excuse me, what?
Because you should know this.
Hive mind download failed. I don't know. There.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, hold on, Ariane. My Laurel, humorously enough, who is a scribal Laurel, help. What do I do now?
Where do I start? How do I do this?
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, you know what? We're buying light tables and pencils, and we're just going to start with that. It's fine. We're just going to trace stuff. It's fine. It's kind of grown, and watching people, getting to watch people fall in love with something and go, you know, that's not scary. Yep. That's my absolute favorite thing in the whole wide world. Like, it can be so intimidating to go, you know, oh, I have to go buy parchment and iron oak gall ink and real gold leaf. And it's scary. But if you hand somebody a light board or a sketch and some watercolor paints, just to play first and just play, and then let them, then watch them make that step to where, but I wonder what happens if, and letting people go that path and explore that. It's really, really exciting. Mm-hmm. And that kind of grew. And then I was talking to Osa, and she's like, well, I need a deputy, and, you know, all this backlog stuff. And so that kind of, it started there, because I have a ridiculous love of spreadsheets and data, and there's not something that makes me much happier than to be handed a pile of data and said it needs to be a spreadsheet and organized.
I love to hear that.
Well, it sounds like the two of you have lots in common.
Yes. Yes, we do. We do. And several other
spreadsheet people.
Found out last weekend when we had the Nordmark.
The thing is I can organize it on the spreadsheet. For the love of God, don't look at my house and compare it, though. It's fine.
No, but that's two completely different things.
Yeah. Different skill sets.
It's like the way that buying craft supplies and actually doing crafts are two different hobbies.
Yeah. No.
This is the same thing. Organizing things in spreadsheets and doing them in real life. Mm-hmm.
No, starting projects, finishing projects, completely separate.
No, we're not even going to go there. No. What we're going to do, though, is we're going to take a really short break, and we're going to hear the lovely voice of one of our listeners, and then we're going to come right back and talk a lot more about this and what it actually is that you what you've been helping Ragnhild with and what you've now taken over. So awesome. We'll just take a short break and be right back.
Hej, jag heter Knut Torstensson och jag lyssnar på Någonstans i Nordmark.
We're back. That is so good. Yes, and we're continuing this interview with our dear friend. Tell us more about what's the job about? What do you do?
So Signet's office is kind of awesome. So you were mentioning about how you get to see the scrolls. And I know you got to, both of you have been queen. You've seen plenty and signed plenty of them. So the scrolls are the awards. They're the way that we say thank you, because everybody in the SCA, almost everyone, is a volunteer, right? And it's a way that all the awards are just a way of saying, hey, thanks for that thing that you do. Whatever it is, we couldn't do it without you. So thank you. And they are made by amazing artisans all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all done at the request of the royalty, whether that's the baronage, baronies, prince, princess, king, queens, request the awards. The Signet's office is kind of the middleman of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So the process, the majesties decide, let's assume majesties in this case, hey, we've got this event coming up. We want to give out XYZ awards, and we want to give them to person A, B, and C. Hey, Signet's office, we would like scrolls for A, B, and C to get these awards. And the Signets go out to the scribes and go, hey, scribes, who is available and has time to make art for this upcoming event? And then depending upon where the event is at, in Drakkaball, that's definitely a consideration, especially is if there's an event in fact, up in the UK is a huge one, especially post everybody's favorite Brexit. It's like mail time or mail cost or shipping. Or even just from Sweden to Germany. That's mail time to get stuff from here or there. It has to go to one place or the other.
Money.
Yeah, also that. And then the Signet's office coordinator goes, okay, so I have, Scribe, Mary Jo, and John Smith, and somebody else. My name bank ran out. Who say they can make? Scrolls
you call,
the
you call them Beatrice and Vanna.
Yeah. I mean, we could go for real. So I go, hey, Vanna, I need a scroll for this upcoming event, and I need it to go. And so once the scribe says, yes, I'll take an assignment for this event, then we give them details. For sake of, Drakkaball does surprise courts generally, so they go directly to that scribe with, this is the person's name, this is the award they're getting, and the date. And if I know anything specific, if we know that person likes gender neutral pronouns, or if it's really important to them to have certain things or not to have certain things, we try to get that information as much as I can and make sure that it goes with the assignment to the person. And then the scribe does their thing and they make these amazing scrolls. And then the Signet's office, I recollect back the scroll text. And that goes in a spreadsheet for their majesty. So when they're getting ready for court, they have, here's what the awards are actually going to say. So depending upon how they like to arrange things, they can, plan their court preparation stuff. And the making sure that the scrolls, keeping kind of contact with the scribes, with their majesties, who's got the scroll? Is it traveling with them? Is it in the mail? Is there a tracking number? Is there not? Keeping all of that information up and going so that scrolls get to the king and queen. Ideally sometime before court prep.
Yeah.
Ideally, yes.
Ideally, it can be quite interesting, that particular part.
The pigeons have flown backwards again, and we won't be handing out this scroll this time. But you still get the award.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's actually where I started with that. Was the backlog? Was the pile of data that needed to be spreadsheeted? Was the all of the scrolls, or what scrolls had been given or had been missed, and what awards? Who still needed a scroll? Or where were these scrolls that had been done that were somewhere in carrier pigeon hands between here and there and had not quite made it all the way to final limbo. Recipient? So I actually, my little OCD project there was post-COVID. I started with the first crown tournament after COVID, and I talked to every person that was on an award report, court report, and said, hey, did you get your scroll? Did you not get your scroll? Tried to backtrack it. Mm-hmm. And so we started with a fresh backlog list at that point. And then I posted out there's a form now to fill out if you are missing a scroll, or if you have somebody's scroll that you are currently the pigeon for, to please fill out that form, because that is the only way at this point you are going to get a backlog scroll done.
Yeah.
So that's also on the back end of things now. And then that happens after a reign ends. So anything during the current reign stays with the active signet. Mm-hmm. And then anything from the previous reign backwards goes to the backlog signet.
In that case, I must ask, is there anything backlog left from my first reign?
I mean, I have a spreadsheet for that.
93?
Not unless someone has requested it.
Okay, good. Whew. Yeah.
So no, I really did, for sake of, because of the nature of changing technology, now there is a Kingdom Drive. And this is one of the really cool things that the web team has been amazing at, moving all of this into stuff the Kingdom owns. So you're not going to have to deal with Libby moves to Sweden or Australia, or just runs away to the, you know, a different planet. And the Google spreadsheet that the backlog is on is gone with her.
No, I mean, that's a problem. Yes.
Yes. And that's one of the really cool things. Like a lot of this was Yida's baby, and she's kept up with Maria's now in the web minister's office. And it's phenomenal what they've built there, where they've made access to all this stuff, where it's just going to be a continual, it's there. The information is there. It'll stay there. But because it was not there previously, I did not try to go through 27 or 30 years of Dragon Ball history talking to every award person ever.
No.
I don't need that many grace hairs. I don't.
I remember when it wasn't that long ago when you posted this about, like, now we have this form for you to fill out. So if you're missing a scroll, please fill this out, and we will make sure that, not that you get the scroll immediately, but it will be on the list.
Mm. Yes.
And that was, for me, as someone who is missing a scroll, which I think a lot of us are, it was just a whole, like, ooh, great. Now I can tell someone. Like,
yeah. There's
now a I know that this can be recorded somewhere.
There's no negative in it.
Nope.
Like, somebody's asked her, like, is it really okay? I don't want to be demanding. No, please do. What this is, an amazing thing for newer scribes, especially, because you get people, especially early in their scribal, who are like, well, I would like to try this, but I don't know if I can do it in a fast turnaround.
Exactly.
And the reality is, a lot of times, because the crown doesn't know who's coming to an event, is I may not get requests for court until 2 or 3 weeks before the event.
Exactly.
That's not a lot of time. Nope. This is a hobby. We all have real lives. Unfortunately, we're not the actual, you know, medieval monk living there 9 hours a day sitting there scribing. It doesn't work.
Nope.
So having backlog assignments is actually really awesome because it gives those scribes, like, if it takes you a month, if it takes you two, if it takes you 6 months, that's okay.
It's fine.
Something to give those folks is really, really awesome as well.
Yep. And it's like, it's quite likely that the person who will eventually receive the scroll has already waited for 5 years. And I mean, what is another 6 months then? Or more. We've seen longer than that. So
I think it's been like 15 years. The oldest one I personally has done is 20 years. Mm-hmm. I did get one request that actually dated back to Dragon Ball's Principality days.
Ooh.
So from 1985, I did have one request that was a dragon's tear.
That's amazing.
And it's been assigned and is being done, and Merit Up is on it, killing it. And yeah, so that was.
So it's never too late. That's good to hear.
No, not at all. Mm. I will say, for sake of boundaries, I'm doing kingdom level. I am not doing y'all. I love you, Nord markers. Y'all figure out.
Yeah,
your
no,
own.
No, you're kidding. You can't do everything.
We can leave that. It's okay.
But yes, so anything that's kingdom backlog or kingdom active is currently my.
Wow.
Yeah, baby. So.
That's amazing. That's so we're extremely, extremely grateful for you doing this, because it's much needed.
I just get to spreadsheet. It's great.
Yeah. And also, I mean, as someone who has quite recently been a queen, it's also like the contact, the ability, like the way that it was run. I mean, obviously I had Ragnell as the person I was talking to about the scrolls and things, but like the to be able to have someone who is like really into spreadsheets, because she's too, and just like when you send things in and they're like, yep, no problem, it's now on the list, and I'm gonna ask around to find someone, and now it's like, yep, I have now assigned this, and like, is there anything in particular that you know about this person? And then we normally have a recommendation that we can share, which is a very good statement of like, why is this person getting this award? So that there can be something like woven into the actual scroll text.
And scribes love that. Yes. As a scribe, it is so much easier to do a scroll, especially if it's someone I don't know, or even if it's someone I don't know as well. But if you tell me a little bit about why, are they a dance person? Are they teaching? Are they whatever they're doing?
Exactly.
We have all of history to draw from. So there's a lot.
Yep.
And so helping narrow it down a little bit is actually really, really useful.
And that's also like a little thing for all of you out there, even if you don't do scribal work or anything. But like, as you all know, the royals on all levels love to get recommendations, because the recommendations are the basis, of course, of being able to give out these awards. But the more you can say, the more you can actually put in the recommendation form, the more information you can put about the person that you want to recommend for something, the better, because then we can get them a more fitting scroll, maybe time period what they would like, or a style, or maybe they have a favorite scribe, maybe they have a friend who is a scribe and they would really want a scroll to be made by them. So anything that you can, don't think that you would put too much information into the, there's no such thing as putting too much information in that form. Everybody will love you for it. The royals will love you, and the Elisif will love you, and the person who gets the assignment will love you for it. So please recommend people and get the information in there. That's great for everyone.
Just write about them. Write.
Tell them why you love them. Tell them why they deserve this. Tell us, or tell everyone why they deserve this award.
Absolutely, yeah.
That will just make everything better.
I mean, the royals can't see everyone. They can't.
No,
but they need to be alerted,
for sure. And and to be able to make the decision if it's like, oh, do we want to give this award? Mm-hmm. Then of course we need to know why someone should have it. So it's
You can't actually know, you know, the entire world everywhere all at the same time.
No, I mean, Drachenwald is large, so it's hard to you. I don't think anyone has met everyone in the kingdom. So it's
challenge mode.
It's a challenge.
So
that's the whole, that's the scribal thing, and that's like, it's a lot of work, I imagine. I mean,
it's kind of hit and miss. That's not the right. I lost my English.
You shouldn't.
No, we're
allowed to
sometimes, but you know.
I mean, to be fair, I don't know the words in the other language either, so it's not actually. But like, it fits and spurts. There's times it's when the upsy downsies. Because all right, the requests come in, and right then it's some active management. It's some really engaged with the community, engaged with that, and then generally there'll be a period of quiet, and you won't see a whole lot necessarily publicly from the Cygnus office. But during that time, I'll get messages from scribes, hey, you know, is this okay? Or, hey, can I bounce some text ideas off you? Or, hey, is there somebody who can help me come up with words? English mm-hmm. isn't my first language, or Swedish, or if you're going to try this in something else, like, I don't know how to write runes. I know a gal, you know. I had a very long conversation about the correct word for baron and baroness in Dutch and Finnish, because it turns out that's a whole complicated question.
Oh,
Finnish. I wanted to use the right question. Thing.
Yeah, and it, she's like, well, it depends. And I'm like, okay. Anytime the answer is, it depends, just, you know.
Yeah.
In that situation, that's not the answer that you want.
No, but it, like, that's, that, it, it, there's so many people that are willing to help out, though. And that's really, that's something else the Signet office doesn't necessarily advertise, but that's what we do. Like, we're just there to help the scribes. And so if helping is literally, I know a guy, or I know a gal, or I know someone who I don't know the answer to 90% of these questions, but somebody does.
Yep.
And I'm willing to track down that person and put you two together and go, you know, make magic.
Here you go.
I think that's one of the good things with the SEA, that you get better at that. Someone asks you something and you're not helpless. You just, I know a guy.
Absolutely. Yes. Very, very much true.
And I think that's actually true for most jobs as well.
Oh, yeah. Like,
to be honest, it's a lot about contacts.
Yeah, it is.
Just trying to help to put people in the right direction. So yeah, it's cool. But then I also know, I mean, we don't have a huge amount of time left, but I would like to touch a little bit upon other interests that I know that you have, that I have been hearing you talk about at Kingdom University, amongst other things, about like Minoan women, awesome things.
Minoan is
I must say that I told the Baron about that we're going to talk to someone who does Minoan, and he was like, does she have snakes?
I mean, no. No, I am not actually a goddess. This is, you know.
Exactly. You don't carry snakes around.
No. The humor, 99% of the time when you say Minoan, and this again is coming from an American perspective, so by all means, my I will completely own that my interaction is probably more American-sided, but the reaction of 90% of Americans is, ooh, boobies!
Oh, yeah.
They're amazing marvels. Americans don't get to see them very often. We're very confused by these things. It's okay. I'm apologizing in advance. I am. It's fine.
No, it's fine. I'm actually thinking boobies and snakes.
Yeah. And it is. And the reality is, like, from a marketing perspective, sex sells.
Oh, yes, it does.
It just does. And so even though there is so much more artwork that is not snakes and boobies, that's what gets attention. And that's what makes the circles of the internet. And that's what, that's what you see more. And then usually my longstanding, I get tagged in this somewhere on social media every month or so, where it's like, oh, they always had their boobies out everywhere. And my standing answer is usually, all right, because frequently men, not always, frequently, is it's like, okay, I want you to go take a kilt. You ain't got a kilt, that's fine. Go get a towel. Wrap it around your waist. Nothing under it. Go find a campfire, low to the ground, and squat. Tell me how long you're going to last like that. And how well do you trust nothing to happen under that towel?
Yep.
Because what we do have from Minoan culture is we do have their bread ovens. We do have the pottery. And they're these low domes. And the simple reality is, how often are you going to bend over a boiling hot, you know, roasting pan, letting everything hang out and hoping that it's all good?
It's a hazard. It's a hazard.
It's a hazard. Yeah.
And so, but they see these, and this is pictures of priestesses and pictures of goddesses and pictures of rituals. And that's, you know, and even if you think modernly, that's not the same stuff we wear in our everyday life as what we wear when we're getting married or whatever other big ceremonial occasion. You wear things that are specific to that ceremonial occasion. Like, I couldn't cook dinner in my wedding dress. Are you kidding me? In my kitchen, that would end up in tears.
In 2,000 years, if the civilization then just have a picture of let's say Lady Gaga from now,
oh my God.
They would have a very, very, very weird perspective of what we wore.
Yeah.
I mean, That's a whole, okay, I've not thought about it that way. I like it. But it is. I wanted something that wasn't Roman and wasn't Egyptian, or not Egyptian, I'm sorry, wasn't Roman, wasn't Greek, because it seemed like everybody did Roman and Greek in the summer. And with layers of bulky fabric around me, I just felt like a walking blimp, and I didn't like it. This is how that whole rabbit hole started. And Minoan is fantastic and fun. It's layers of lightweight linen that are brightly colorful, kilted, flounced, ridiculously, really ornate, really patterned, really decorative. I was actually in Rome just there. We were talking about before this was painted linen cloth from like the first and second century that's incredibly detailed, realistic painted linen cloth. And like that postdates Minoan, but they painted everything. We have so much pottery and frescoes that are incredibly detailed and incredibly well painted that the idea of like painted fabric is not much of a stretch. When you've done painted everything else, you're going to get paint on your fabric accidentally anyway, let's be honest.
And then you might as well start painting it. And
you should just roll with it at that point, right?
We tend to forget the statues were painted. I mean, in this day, we see all the white marble that the paint faded, fell off, but they were painted. We need to remember that.
Yes, I was just talking to friends earlier today about that and sitting them. My favorite is always the picture of the archer with the like crazy diamond yellow, green, red leggings that are like straight off of the most obnoxious modern design ever. they're the best, but they're ancient Rome. And yeah.
But we're just not used to seeing them like that. And then when we do, it's like, oh, that can't be right. It just looks weird. But of course, it's because, time has passed. No, I do love the idea of, I remember when I heard you talking and showing pictures about like the Minoan dress, it's like, ooh, this is different. This is cool.
It's so easy to make too. Yeah. I literally laid down in my driveway and traced it. That was it. It's so the proverbial tea tunic, where it's, you know, we think of it as like the t-shirt shape. That's Minoan.
Yeah,
that's it. There's, you don't have to worry about gores, bodices, laces, fitting, you know. You slit it down the front, it's deeper, we have varying heights of depth, and then you can accessorize. And you can either add the kilted skirts in the, which come in a whole bunch of different styles. If you're just looking at the evidence, we have them from single layers to two to four to some with none. That they didn't always wear that. That was probably a ceremonial thing too. And then later on, when we get into Mycenaean, you also get a kind of bolero jacket that pulls over the top and is really cool. And so, but either way, you end up with a short sleeve, long dress that's comfy and super easy to make. And all of those ridiculously colored pattern fabrics that you didn't know what to do with, now you know.
That sounds perfect. Perfect. Yeah, I look forward to this, and hopefully, I mean, if you do have some links that we can share, that would be cool to send over, so then we can share it when we post this episode, so people can actually see what we're talking about and not just trying to imagine in their head what it's actually going to look like. It could be easy if there's just something to be like, oh, you can look at pictures.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they know that it's not just boobs and snakes.
Exactly. I mean, there are also boobs and snakes. If you would like to be a Minoan snake goddess, I have good bad news for you. There are a lot of them. However, many of them are forgeries. So that's a whole nother ballgame. One of the first discoverers was a Swedish artist and a archaeologist of very questionable ethics and slightly loose. You know, that piece from that building over there probably went on this one over here. So we're learning a lot since then. So a lot of the newer evidence is much more in line with how we nowadays were like, no, the piece here goes with the piece here that goes with the...
Yeah.
And no, you can't just add stuff.
No. Now that's the problem with archaeologists. And well, I'm also thinking about my previous line of work with paleontology. It was a thing that one did back in the day. Like, oh, I have a bone here and a bone here. I'm just going to put this together. And this is probably...
Must have looked like this.
And the same thing with, of course, pottery, buildings, people, whatever, items of clothing. Like, we're just going to put this together in an outfit. And it's like, not sure about that. So yeah, I think we've improved there, which is a nice thing. Like getting a little bit better at actually looking at the source material and be like, is this realistic or not? Yeah. Yeah. And also thinking about like, what did they actually wear on a daily basis compared to this is a goddess, this is a royal.
I think it's a really, really just asking that question and then thinking about it. And that's, I think, one of the amazing things about the SCA is when we start wearing it and then realize, like, well, I can't walk in this, or I can't do stuff in this, or I can. Or maybe I need a little bit more of a slit or a little bit less. And you can really, when you think about that, this was people's actual clothing, it's going to change your perspective a little bit on how that might have actually worked.
Mm. Well, that is living history. That's what we do.
Trying things out. Does this work? Can I do anything in it? No, I can't. Okay, fine. Yeah. Then probably either it didn't look like this, or the person who wore this didn't actually do anything except sit on a chair. So, which could also be a thing, definitely. But then
absolutely. But it's more difficult to do that nowadays than it was back then.
Yes. Yeah. Few of us have lives that makes us just sit on a chair.
You know, it's really inconvenient.
It's extremely so.
I'd be bored out of my head.
Yes. Yeah. Even if I had snakes. I mean,
oh yeah,
it would still be really boring.
Maybe especially with snakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with
terrified.
Terrified. Oh, no, I probably wouldn't. I would turn more into a sort of Steve Irwin kind of person, I guess, to be like, oh, you're a beauty, aren't you?
Yeah. It's like, I would like to cuddle you. Would you like to be cuddled by me?
Yeah. And then it would just bite my neck. I just very recently saw a clip of Steve, a very young Steve Irwin, when he got bit on his neck by a snake in live broadcast television. It's quite funny, actually. He didn't even think about it; like, he didn't hardly reacted,
and the just kind of like what else
panicked. Yeah. So, anyway, that was a bit of a sidetrack. Sorry about that. Like, but snakes. Yeah. So, I'm actually thinking that it's about time for us to wrap up, because now we have talked a lot about you, your history in the SEA, like your travels of the known world and moving around.
Little places and then some.
Yeah. Yeah. And then of course all the scribal work. And I hope that it's been the scribal job that you do is something that I think it's important for lots of people to hear about, like how it actually works. Like how do the scrolls come about? Like, why has this person made the scroll for me, and how was the process done and everything?
I mean, it is not the royals that make the scrolls.
No.
And it's such a cool opportunity. Like,
it is
really, and for anybody who wants to try it, like, it's a very, very, it is the most welcoming community I have found in the SCA. People, everyone is like, yes, yeah, you want to try?
And
there are real rules in Drachenwald. You need just to make a scroll.
Yeah.
Shoot me a message.
Yeah.
That's about it. Like, let's try. And if you want a backlogger, if you just want something simple to play with, if you just want ideas of things that you could try without feeling like, oh, I'm terrified of this thing and it's scary, it doesn't have to be.
No.
That could be pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. So yeah, thanks. And also, like, thanks for this little glimpse into Minoan dress and clarifying that it's not only boobs and snakes. There's also
and that is so colors. Cool because we're not really used to doing anything else than 600 to 1600. So and most people in Drachenwald stays in that era. So it's fun to see people doing something else.
Yeah, it's like let's you know, there's a whole world out there. We can kind of poke around and see what happens.
And especially since we're actually moving into a warmer climate, more time, there's also a need for different types of dress that can be worn when it's like 35 degrees. And
wool is very, very nice, but no. I did my homework here. 110 Fahrenheit is 43 Celsius. That's hot.
Yes. And that is, not always what you want to play in. So
then Minoan, definitely.
Good thing. It's fabulous, easy, and Yeah, I will definitely send you some links, and there's some amazing resources out there. I'll always chat about that.
Wonderful. Yeah. So
But
then,
if you listen to this and have questions about
exactly.
Minoan and costume, please send them to us. We can pass them forward, or they can just contact you directly, perhaps. But you can mail us on nagonstansinordmark@gmail.com.
You can, or you can find us on Facebook and on Messenger and send us a message there. And also on the Spotify platform where you can send us a voicemail if you like. So there are all these ways of finding us and contacting
You'll
us.
find us.
You'll find us and give us suggestions on what else you'd like to hear about in the podcast, because we have another bunch of episodes to do in English.
In English.
So in English, yes. In
Yes.
perfect Swedish school
It's
English.
Swedish English.
I will speak
Yes.
like this. Okay, no, we're not going to do that. So
You speak for
we should do,
yourself. I can speak like this.
we'll do an episode which is completely in the Swedish chef from The Muppet Show. Yeah. Booty booty, booty booty, bork, 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 bork. Okay.
Sorry, just got
Okay.
carried away there.
Wrapping this up now, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Elisif, for being our guest today.
Was lovely to have you.
Yeah, and
Thank
we
you for
hope
inviting
to,
me. So.
you're most welcome. And we hope to speak to you soon again, maybe on another topic. See what that can
Scary.
be. Yeah.
Done.
So
Done.
we're just gonna say bye bye for now, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Yeah. Okay.
And before we end this program, we will have a short summary in Swedish
Of
for
course.
those inclined for to doing listening to that.
Yes, definitely. And well, we'll see what that summary covers. It
Oh
might be
God.
what we've talked about today or something completely different. We never know.
It's
So
always a surprise.
anyhow, talk to you soon. Thank you, Elisif. Bye bye, Vanna.
Bye.
Bye.
Kort sammanfattning på svenska. I denna veckas avsnitt talade Vanna och Bea engelska. Igen. Kul för dem. Veckans gäst var Elisif Gydarsdottir. Hon har varit med i föreningen i snart 10 år. Hon och hennes man, Sir John, hittade SCA i West Kingdom, alltså västra kungariket, det vill säga Kalifornien. Eftersom de arbetar militärt har de flyttat runt både här och där innan de hamnade i Drachenwald, i baroniet Knights Crossing, det vill säga Tyskland. Elisif har tagit över ämbetet Signet Clerk, det vill säga den som har ansvar för att alla ska få sina scrollor. Det är faktiskt inte kungaparet som gör alla de fina diplom de delar ut. Det är engagerade konstnärer som arbetar hårt på kammaren för att kungaparet ska kunna dela ut utmärkelserna. Det är här Elisif kommer in. Hon är spindeln i nätet som ser till att allt flyter så bra det bara kan. Elisif gillar Drachenwald för att på evenemangen här räknar man oftast med att det finns en möjlighet att bo över inomhus. I USA är det verkligen inte alltid så. Där tältar man eller ordnar boende själv. Hon tycker också att folk i Drachenwald är väldigt trevliga och hjälpsamma. Tack för det. Slutligen berättar hon också lite grann om sitt specialintresse, minoisk kultur och klädedräkt. Nu när tidsgränsen i SCA har ändrats och det mesta i forntiden är tillåtet, så har många, speciellt i USA, breddat sitt intresse och gör grekiska, romerska och egyptiska dräkter. Elisif gör minoiskt, det vill säga den forntida kulturen på Kreta. Och hon vill påpeka att allt är inte bara tuttar och ormar. Det är faktiskt väldigt lite tuttar och ormar. Det här avsnittet innehöll bland annat rödvin och ost. Om 2 veckor är Bea och Vanna tillbaka igen för mer snack på engelska.